I'm really pleased to be able to introduce somebody that most of us know. I think all of you know Matthew Andrus, who's been our missioner for Rwanda for the last 6 months or so. And you can include any details about that you want to include. But when I knew he would be here for a short time before entering into a new part of his life and a new assignment in his life, I wanted him to bring the word to us, but to do it in the context of what he's been learning living in Kigali and really representing us to our brothers and sisters there. We're going to extend this time today a little bit because there's probably a lot of practical questions that have come up as I've met with him this week and that others have had. So after our coffee hour today, grab your coffee and come back. We're going to just do a question and answer session for whoever wants to hang around and do that. But bring today whatever you have for us. It's good to see you.
It's good to be here.
Again, the Lord bless you. Amen.
It is really good to be here. So good to be back home among you again. As Jay said, for the past several months, I've been living in Kigali, and I've had the honor to be an extension of Church of the Redeemer in Rwanda, and that's been wonderful. But although I was sad to leave, and in many ways not quite ready to leave, I'm really happy to be back here at Church of the Redeemer and to be back home, because it was you who sent me, and you who supported me while I was there. Your prayers, your financial support, even the birthday card that you signed and sent to me, it all let me know that even though I was away, I was still part of this community here. And for that, I'm grateful. So grateful that I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to adequately express just how thankful I am. But I want to begin by saying simply thank you for that. It is a privilege to bring you greetings from our brothers and sisters in Rwanda, particularly those at St. Stephen's Cathedral in Kigali, which was my church home away from home. But it's a special privilege to be able to bring you greetings from our sister congregation in Ruwengeri. I had the opportunity to visit our sister congregation there, and they specifically asked me to tell you how much they care about you and how much they pray for you. And I'll just say a little bit about the congregation I visited. It's the central church of the Rugeshi Parish. The community congregation that meets at the St. Michael's Church building, which Father Jay has visited, is a part of that parish. Properly speaking, it's the Sunrise School that comprises St. Michael's Church. And the Rugeshi Church consists of 1,400 members that are not associated with the school. On the first Sunday of every month, they all meet together for Eucharist. It's a brick building just a few miles down the road from the Sunrise School. They've got a dirt floor, a tin roof, and the most beautiful view of the Virunga Mountains that you can imagine. It is stunning and jaw-dropping. On the other Sundays of the month, they meet in separate locations, owing to the fact that most members of that congregation don't have transportation and find it inconvenient to walk several miles to church. And so they meet in separate locations when they're not having Eucharist. The Central Church is one of those locations. The St. Michael's Church is one of those locations. There are five others. Each congregation has a volunteer lay leader. But for all 1,400 members, there is one ordained clergy. His name is Pastor Emil Magisha, and he is a busy man. When I was in Rwanda, I had a lot of amazing experiences. But if I were going to make a list of the top five, my trip to the Rugeshi Parish would easily make the list without a second thought. And it was special for many reasons. And the first was simply cultural. St. Stephen's Church in Kigali is it's a largish church. It's an English language service. It's attended by quite a few expats. It's not quite as formal or as liturgical as our worship here, but the songs are the same. It's the same accompaniment, keyboard, drums, guitars, and don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining about that. I made that my church home because it felt so much like home. But Rugeshi, that was African church. It was a three-hour service. Most of that time was taken up with singing and dancing. There was congregational singing, and each of the four choirs in the Central Church location sang two prepared songs. Nearly every song was accompanied by some kind of dancing. A lot of times it was just impromptu dancing. And I don't mean, you know, kind of like swaying in the aisles, clapping our hands. It's clear the pews, get out in the middle, you know, full out dancing. There were also a dance troupe there that did some choreographed numbers, including traditional Rwandan Intore dancing. But of all of that, I mean, of all of that, what sticks out to me most in my mind was how much joy there was in the worship. These are a community that just exuded joy, and it was a privilege to be a part of that. The one low point of the whole service was the sermon, given by yours truly. It was 15 minutes long and unanimously regarded as too short. When I was finished, the lay leader remarked that I was clearly a man of few words. So, good news for the impatient among you today. But the visit was more important than just for cultural reasons, and it was certainly more significant than my silly little sermon. We as a congregation are trying to develop relationships with our brothers and sisters in Rwanda and in that church specifically. And one thing that I've learned in the last several months is that in Rwanda, in relationships, personal presence counts for everything. That's all there is. It's a little hard for us to get our heads around that in our culture today because we communicate by a lot of different ways. We build relationships a lot of different ways. We use letters, emails, phone calls, and personal interaction. And we probably prioritize personal interaction. But in Rwanda, written communication counts for nothing. It's not part of the culture. And so it's really, really important that we have a physical presence there. And so what might have seemed like a small thing to me, just a Sunday morning visit, was immensely important to them. You see, people come to the Sunrise School all the time, and they visit St. Michael's Church. But at the Central Church, where I visited, I was the second foreigner to be there, ever. I gave them less than 24 hours notice that I was coming, but they treated me like an honored guest. They take their partnership with us very seriously, and they've been eager to meet us in person. But more than eagerness, in fact, they had been expecting someone to visit. The lay leader at that location, a man named Rukundo, had told the congregation over a month before I came, before I was even planning to come, that he'd had a dream that someone from the outside was coming to visit. And they would be coming before the end of the year, and that's what he told the congregation. And he very much believed that the dream was from God, and so he and the whole congregation were waiting for someone to come. And when I showed up suddenly in December, he had no hesitation in claiming that God's promise to them had been fulfilled. During the service, there was an impromptu congregational meeting in which it was decided that I should be given a new name, Matteo Cesarano, which is Matthew Covenant. But that's really a story for Advent. It's about expectation, waiting, hoping, and fulfillment. And I'm only telling it to you now to relate to you how earnestly they desire to be in relationship with us, how much they want to know us, how much they want to meet us, and to encourage us that if we want this relationship to flourish, we're going to have to make it a priority to meet our brothers and sisters in Christ in Rwanda. But it's Lent now, and for the rest of this morning, I want to talk about this time of year in Rwanda. As a liturgical season, Lent is not given the same importance that we give it here. Part of that has to do with the fact that the Rwandan church is just not quite as formal and traditional in their liturgy as we are, but I think it also has to do with the time of year that Lent comes. You see, it was this time of year, in 1994, that Rwanda experienced what could only be described as hell. Most of you know these stories, how more than 800,000 Rwandans were killed in the course of a few months. To put it in perspective, that's one person in 10. I still find that a little hard to get my head around, but what I understand is an account from my friend Brigitte, who once remarked to me that 16 of her relatives were buried in the mass grave in Gisozi. Many of you have also heard the stories of reconciliation and forgiveness that have emerged over the last 16 years. It is nothing short of miraculous. And as if that weren't enough, there has also been a remarkable amount of social and economic development in Rwanda over the last decade. And in many respects, Rwanda is becoming an example to the rest of Africa. As Bishop John Rishihana has said, and as I'm sure you have heard him say, God is redeeming Rwanda. And that's a beautiful thing to witness. But without taking anything away from that, I want to share with you the other side of the coin. And you get a hint of it in what Bishop John is saying. When he says that God is redeeming Rwanda, that suggests that the work isn't done yet. And it's not. Rwanda, for all of its reconciliation and development, for all of the transformation that God is accomplishing, is still a country that's characterized by brokenness. And that becomes very evident at this time of year. In April, Rwandans will take a week to remember the genocide. And for several weeks before and after this event, everyone in the country is going to fall into a depression. It happens every year. Because people are still struggling with their memories, still wrestling with grief or guilt or both. And make no mistake, this is not all the collective remembrance of a united people about divisions that are long past. It's true that people no longer openly talk about being Hutu or Tutsis, but beneath the surface of a national identity and the community work days, divisions persist. A few weeks ago, Pastor Deo was here from Prism Fellowship Rwanda, an organization that I got to spend some time with. And he might have told you about some of the programs that they run for children. Pastor Deo often talks about reconciliation in the aftermath of the genocide. And people often ask him what that has to do with children who were born after the genocide even happened. And he responds that although the children do not identify as Hutu or Tutsi, they identify themselves as children of genocide perpetrators or children of genocide survivors. And so those divisions are still meaningful. Another type of division is political division, and that's going to become more evident this year. Rwanda is going to be holding presidential elections this summer. Opposition parties have been suppressed in Rwanda, and it's not clear right now how the election's going to go, but almost certainly there are going to be some people who feel like their political voice has not been heard in the political process. The ongoing legacy of the genocide is also felt as the Gacaca courts in Rwanda finish their work this year. These community courts have been trying and sentencing genocide perpetrators. They are not staffed by lawyers or judges. They're staffed by community members. And some people feel positively about this. They feel that this is a good venue for perpetrators to be held accountable in the communities most affected by their crimes. And others point out that these courts don't respect rules of evidence or criminal procedure. A German journalist that I spoke with had interviewed some people who estimate that as many as 10% of the verdicts in Gacaca courts are wrong verdicts, which means there are people in prison for crimes they didn't commit. It's tempting to think that these are legal problems or simple differences of opinion. And for many Rwandans, that's true. For many Rwandans, the genocide is a thing of the past, and the divisions that exist are part of a community living together. But for some, the stakes are higher than that. Since 1994, Rwanda has been a more or less peaceful country, peaceful internally. They've been at peace with their neighbors. And Kigali is one of the safest cities in Africa, and I always felt very safe there. But in the week that I left, there were 3 grenade attacks in Kigali, 4 deaths, 18 injuries. The opposition political party, which has been exiled in the Congo, has claimed responsibility for those. And just this past Thursday night, I heard that there were 2 more grenade attacks. All of this suggests that this is a country that's not done working through its brokenness yet. And as I said this, said earlier, I'm not saying any of this to counter or to contradict the stories of reconciliation, forgiveness that we've heard. We should be very much encouraged and not discouraged by those stories. It's meaningful development, meaningful reconciliation, meaningful forgiveness, and we should give God praise for that because he's really doing amazing things. The reason I'm telling you those things is because I want to let you know how vitally important it is that we continue our work and that we continue our relationship with Rwanda. It's essential that we continue in our prayers and support for institutions like the Sunrise School and Prison Fellowship Rwanda. It's necessary that we go to Rwanda and meet our brothers and sisters there to put faces with their names and to let them know that we care and want to be in relationship with them. God is redeeming Rwanda, but God doesn't work alone. And we see that in our Old Testament reading for today. God was moved to action on behalf of the Israelites. And we know what happens in the chapters following. God did mighty things in Egypt. But he didn't do it by himself. He sent Moses, along with his brother Aaron, to confront Pharaoh, to convince the Israelite leaders, to work God's wonders, and to eventually lead the Israelites out of Egypt. But that is, in fact, how God always operates, through and with his people. God is redeeming Rwanda, and we have the opportunity to be part of that. Now, what does any of this have to do with Lent? I said that I was going to speak Lent, and I don't want to spend all of my time this morning just telling stories about Africa. But what is going on in Rwanda echoes what goes on in our own lives. God is redeeming us, shaping us into beings more like himself. I see this in my own life as I look back over the last year. A year ago at this time, I was in a funk. I'd lost my job. I was questioning my direction. Dan's nodding, he knows. I was questioning my direction in life. I was experiencing grief over broken relationships. And then I went to Rwanda. I had an extraordinary experience. I formed new relationships, and I'm now looking forward to a job that I've been wanting for almost a decade. But Lent forces me to look a little deeper at myself, and I realize I'm still a broken human being. Maybe a little more mature than I was last year, but not much. Still struggling with the same sin. Still convinced of the merits of relying on myself instead of relying on my community and my God. In Rwanda, there's no need for Lent to be reminded that the country is still broken and hurting. Everyone experiences that firsthand. But I need a reminder. I'm just that arrogant. But that's not the end of my arrogance. I'm arrogant enough to think sometimes that God's not very good at this redemption business. See, I don't want the God who walks with me through Lent, who accomplishes redemption in steps. I don't want the God who patiently works through people over two decades to redeem Rwanda. I want the God who waves a magic wand and fixes everything right now. And that's the same reaction when I read the New Testament reading in our gospel lessons for today. I'm a little uncomfortable with the God who brings the Israelites out of Egypt only to strike them down in the wilderness. Even for sins of idolatry and immorality, seems like God should be more forgiving, right? And I'm a little uncomfortable with imagining a God as a gardener who cuts down a fig tree because it doesn't produce fruit. It sounds vindictive and vengeful. I want the easy God. The forgiving, loving, gives me what I want grandpa God. Who doesn't really hold me accountable for my actions. Who doesn't ask me patiently to wait for redemption. And who certainly doesn't ask me to participate in the redemption of others. But that's not God. That's an idol of my own creation. And that's what I've learned over the last 5 months. And I don't know if that was being in Rwanda or if it was just my turn to learn that lesson. But I started to realize something about the true God. The one who says to us, like he said to Moses, I am who I am. I started to realize something about the God who is what he is, whether or not I can understand him, describe him, or approve of him. But I have a choice. I can either accept the God who is what he is, or not. I can either assent to his redemptive work in my life, or not. I can either respond to his call to participate in the redemption of others, or not. And that's the choice that we have as a congregation. We have the opportunity to be part of God's redemptive work in Rwanda. And this will happen on God's table and not on ours. And the results will be the results that God wants, not us. But during the season of Lent, as I prepare for Easter and come to recognize my own arrogance for what it is, I realize that's really what I want to happen in Rwanda and in my own life.